She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 157, Learn How to Be Comfortable with the Discomfort of Being an Entrepreneur with Erin Bagwell.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hi, She Did It Her Way listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. As always, you guys know I'm so excited. We have another fantastic guest. But before we get into today's episode, I wanted to share a story with you from a few weeks ago. And that is, a few weeks ago, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, having a little mini girls weekend before I headed off to Vegas to work for a client. And that Saturday morning, a few of us got up early to hike Camelback Mountain, which to get all the way to the top and down is about 3 hours. And whew, it was completely different. That exercise was completely different than any sort of exercise that I'm used to. Even still, I was like huffing and puffing as I was moving up the mountain, which also might have been the air pressure, is it? Or yeah, whatever that is. You guys know what I'm talking about. But the main thing that I want to talk about is what I realized at times when I was climbing up the mountain, I would be so focused on how much we still had left to go. And I got probably about 75% of the way up and I realized, and I looked up and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's still so much more to climb. But one thing that I forgot to do was actually look down and see how far we or I have come. And I believe that in our lives, it's easy to get caught up in the fact of how much more is left to be done versus really taking a step back and looking at how far we've come. And we don't give ourselves enough credit to live in that moment, to embrace it and to celebrate it. So whatever it is that you're working on, I want you to take a step back and congratulate yourself and embrace in the success that you've had thus far. Because it doesn't matter whether it's an inch or a mile, it matters if you're moving forward. I even personally struggle with this, for sure. But when I was climbing up that mountain a couple weeks ago and realized like, man, even though I'm so focused on how much I have left, which is like 25% of the mountain, I needed to turn around and take a look at how far I came at that point and I climbed 75% of it. So take a moment and just congratulate yourself. Gain that perspective and realize how far you've come and embrace that and use that to move you forward. Today's episode, we have Erin Bagwell, who is the founder of the documentary Dream Girl that is all about females, women dreaming and going after their dreams and not being afraid to achieve them. Some of the things that Erin's had, Marie Forleo in this documentary, she was able to have a conversation with her along with so many other influential women. And in 6 months, Erin was able to get her Kickstarter off the ground and she did a 30-day Kickstarter and raised her goal of $100,000. And so in this episode, you guys are going to know what avenues of fundraising and investing to take when building a business, product, or Kickstarter. We're also going to understand how to stretch and work within your budget, figure out how to disassociate yourself with your product enough so you can monetize it. We talk about how sometimes it's difficult for us to ask for money when it's personally directly tied to our brand or our product, but then switching that in your mind so that you can get comfortable about asking for money and monetizing it. And also learn to be comfortable with the discomfort of being an entrepreneur because, ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing comfortable about being an entrepreneur. It's getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And there's so much more that we talk about in this episode, so stay tuned.
All right, ladies and gents too, because I know gents listen to the podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. And on today's episode, I'm welcoming Erin Bagwell, who is the founder and creator of Dream Girl. So I'm gonna turn it over to her and have her share with you guys and with us what is it, and then we're gonna talk through about how she created it and the inspiration behind it, along with so much more. So Erin, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about what is it that you do, and then we'll talk about your journey and how you got there.
For sure. So Dream Girl is a documentary showcasing the stories of inspiring and ambitious female entrepreneurs. 3 years ago, I launched a Kickstarter campaign to produce the film that raised over $100,000 in 30 days. And since then, I have been on a real Dream Girl whirlwind journey. And we actually premiered the film at the White House last May of 2016. And currently, I am in the process of figuring out creative and innovative ways to share the film. So I basically run a distribution company, and the film has been seen in 81 different countries.
Oh my gosh.
And I work every day with a full-time staff to work with hosts and make sure that they're planning out fantastic events and figuring out what collateral we can create to support them. So it's been a really, really incredible journey, and we're actually going to release the film digitally very, very soon.
Yeah, I saw that on the website. Is that when you're people can download it and watch it straight from their home, correct?
Absolutely. Right now we have, you know, digital streaming events, so you can tune in for 24 hours and watch the film with our team, and we do live events that way once a month, but you'll be able to actually have it be your own later on very soon.
How cool is that? That's so exciting. Well, talk to us then, you know, at what point did you have this idea, and then talk to us about the preparation, and then just being a director and piecing it together, like how did you know you wanted it to look the way that it's now, like the product itself?
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted to be a filmmaker, and I guess I've been making films since I was a girl. So I've been editing for like, you know, over 10 years. I love storytelling. I think the medium is really interesting. And really, I moved to New York City after graduation. I studied design and film in school. And I came to New York with big dreams of working for a film company. And I'm really creative, and I also have a dual degree in design. So I actually got a job as a designer first, and I worked and kind of floated around the advertising industry for a couple of years until I started working on a job where I was sexually harassed. And at that time, feeling so unseen, feeling so insecure, I really got obsessed with feminism and feminist journals and online blogs. And I actually started my own feminist storytelling blog called Feminist Wednesday, which everyone can still check out now. It's been up and running for about 4 years. And basically, we just bear witness to women's experiences and feminist stories. And through kind of exploring the blog and, you know, learning about gender issues, feeling more confident in some of the structural nuances that happen in corporate culture, that you know, sometimes the cards are stacked against you when you have, you know, all old white male suit wearing superiors. So feminism kind of gave me the tools to kind of dissect that and understand that, you know, just because I'm a young woman doesn't mean I don't have value or worth to offer in a company. And so I got the courage to quit my job and just work freelance design because I was so miserable at the job, and it felt really, really soul sucking. And really, to be honest, I wanted to turn Feminist Wednesday into a place where I could monetize. I wanted it to be my full-time job. And I was trying to figure out creative ways to do that. You know, I felt like I needed a product or something to sell. And the idea of making a film seemed really appealing to me because I'm, you know, I have a filmmaking background. I'm pretty savvy. I edit, you know, so I could do the whole process from start to finish. I felt pretty confident in that. And I became so obsessed with the women I was meeting on Feminist Wednesday, you know, the entrepreneurs' journeys about quitting their job and running a company and being successful seemed so romantic to me. So I kind of, not on a whim, but I felt like I was at such a crossroads in my life where I was really open and ready to receive a big idea. I was really ready to take on a big project. I had been so creatively stifled at work. So I was ready to like dive all in and do a Kickstarter. And it took me, 6 months to put the Kickstarter together. It was not a quick process. It took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and networking and, putting together the trailer for it that ended up raising $100,000, thankfully.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was such a long journey, but I was really, I think, going back to your question about kind of getting prepared or, setting something up, I was really open and I was ready kind of for the universe to send me something really big and audacious.
What would you say? I mean, having a successful Kickstarter of a six-figure raise, what would you, if you could only attribute that success to one thing, if anyone else is thinking about doing a Kickstarter, what would you attribute it to?
I think being in person, which sounds really counterintuitive to what we think when we think about online campaigns and marketing, but I think I learned pretty quickly that my network could only, contribute so much money and that I had to get out there and I had to build a bigger network and I had to, try to get into other people's networks. So actually going to in-person events and meeting people face to face was, I think, the biggest thing that helped me, find new leads and find new sources and find new networks to monetize off of.
When you, and I'm kind of retracking back here, for when you decided to quit your job and then go freelance, was it just one day you, the straw broke the camel's back and you're like, I'm it, this is it, I'm done? Or did you have any sort of like, okay, in 3 months I'm leaving, so here's what I have to do to get my ducks in a row? What was your lead up like?
Yeah, I mean, I went on a lot of job interviews and nothing was really sticking, and I was kind of in the process of figuring out how to leave. And I actually got a like an email from my friend who was running a tech company at the time, and he was talking about hiring my husband to do some work for him. And I knew that my husband wouldn't take the job, but I knew that if I could convince Mark to hire me, that perhaps I could leave my job and this could be something that would kind of float me a couple of months while I figured out the next step. So I actually convinced one of my friends to hire me over my husband to do a job to be able to kind of get out of there. So I kind of took a temporary solution to try to be able to solve, a problem that I was feeling like needed to get resolved pretty quickly.
Oh, totally. I totally share that. I call mine like the bridge job, because I like quit a full-time job that was crazy hours every other weekend, and then I went and took a contract position, and it like gave me 25 hours back to my life every single week, and it just gave me the space to breathe and to really figure out like how do I set myself up for the next step. So totally. So talk to us then. You like landed the $100,000. How did you, I mean, what is it like to run a budget of $100,000? And then also know that you've got to pay yourself to eat, you've got to figure out the production and the revenue stream, or how is the film making money? Like, what all goes into that thought process?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel like I was pretty naive when it came to how that all would shake down. And I just felt really grateful and really excited. And, I had actually planned to make $100,000, which sounds really crazy, but our first goal was 57,000. And then me and my director of photography worked together and said, okay, well, what if we make 80? What if we make 100? What would be the cameras that we would get? How would our supplies change? Who could we add on set? So I actually had a preliminary budget and was kind of ready to take on that role. But they always say it costs like twice as much money and twice as much time, which also totally happened to me. We ran out of funding like the month before I got married, which was like a really intense and stressful process. I was actually pitching angel investors to get our finishing funds. And so the weird thing about film too is like you're kind of in this insular budget where, you get the money, and then my real main job is to make the film, is to produce the film, in all of the different facets with all the different parts. And then you really don't think about monetizing until the film is complete. Then that becomes your product, and then you figure out how to sell it or how to, traditionally distribute it, whether it's through festivals or independently. There's so many different avenues. So thankfully, we didn't have to think about monetizing for, maybe the first year and a half of production. It was really, how do we make this budget work? How do we stretch every dollar around the block? How do we really just finish the film?
Who are you most excited about that you brought, that you were able to bring on the film?
You know, I was always so, I mean, I picked every woman, you know, that we featured, obviously. And I think I was so surprised always at how generous the women were when they sat down. And, you know, we had an all-female crew, which I think really helped set the tone of, like, the comfort and the intimacy that we were trying to achieve on screen. And, you know, I will say, for some reason, Annie Wang, who is the co-founder of a company called Senval, she does 3D printing manufacturing. I remember being so surprised at how, like, articulate and, like, lovely and just, she kind of glowed on set. And she told us, you know, I did tons and tons of hours of research about these women. I read their books. I mean, I watched every interview. And it was always so cool when they would tell you something that you had never found before that you didn't know. Like they were letting us in on these secrets for their lives. So I would say, you know, all the women were really, really generous with us. And I think the film is so powerful because they were so honest.
Mm-hmm. How, I mean, you know, talking about your initial distribution or after you created the film, has your idea or what you wanted your distribution to be or ideas of creating revenue shifted over time from what you originally thought it was going to be and then now what it is today, and how did that shift?
Absolutely. You know, I think in the beginning I was so sensitive to sharing the film with people in a way that, you know, I think as artists we feel this shame and this guilt around selling, you know, something we've poured our heart and souls into. And I think that in the beginning I felt a lot of discomfort around money and around charging for it. And because it felt so close to me, it felt like such a big part of my, you know, I'd spent the last year and a half, you know, one-on-one with the media and with creating. And then all of a sudden I was kind of shifted into this different role of selling it. And that took, I will be honest, it took a couple of months for me to get over and for me to be able to view the film as a product. And as something that, you know, we need to monetize for, I'm running a business. I need to get paid. My employees need to get paid. I kind of had to desensitize myself from the work in a way because I'm just so emotionally connected to it. And that's something that I think, you know, it's funny. I haven't watched the film in, I'll say it's probably been maybe a month, which doesn't seem like a huge amount of time. But for me, I've, you know, seen it thousands and thousands of times. And I think I've kind of kept my distance from it in a way because I need to not be able to be, you know, so immersed. When I watch it, I see, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it. I, you know, feel the crew's energy behind me as I'm asking the questions. It's such a transformative thing for me to absorb and watch. So I think that you have to kind of learn how to disconnect from that and get back to the business.
Yeah, I mean, and I share the same sentiments as what you're speaking about of, you know, being a creative and then also knowing that you have to run a business. Was there anything in particular that you, like, did you read something? Was there a mantra? What was the mindset shift? Did you do something every day that reminded you that you needed to be able to get in the right mindset at all? Or was it just kind of you brought in the awareness and that was enough for you to make that transition?
I think being really mindful of in a way kind of trying to desensitize yourself and to distance yourself from the creative. You know, I still edit and I, you know, we just produced a web series. I'm still very immersed in the content and I allow myself spaces to do that. But then you kind of have to figure out a way to kind of, you know, have one day be about creative, one day be about, you know, just business and kind of figure out how to make those divides for you. So I don't think that there's anything, you know, super specific as far as like practices, but I will say, you know, our mantra for making the film was serve the story and our mantra for building the business is serve the audience. So we have learned such a great, really like a sales 101 from our hosts. You know, what do they want? How much do they want to pay? Like we're constantly, you know, sending out polls and sending out surveys and trying to get in their heads and ask them questions and, you know, see how we can do better because we want, you know, their process and their experience of showing the film to be amazing. And so that has really helped us kind of move into this new mindset of, okay, it's not about the story anymore. It's about the audience.
How, I mean, what has, What's been the toughest lesson for you looking back since you started this journey all the way from the Kickstarter place? Something that like kind of almost your it just it has shaped the way that you do not only just like business but life now after that specific experience, if that makes sense of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hardest thing is that, I think as entrepreneurs, I think there's always a little bit of like island fever in the way that we think, like, one day we're going to get to this place where everything is calm and, the water is beautiful and we're just going to be basking in this, like, everything is going to be great. And not to say that everything isn't great, but there's a certain amount of chaos that just occurs naturally, like in my day-to-day life. And, even as we get bigger or as we get more stable or as I hire more employees, like it's still like the chaos of being an entrepreneur and not being able to turn it off and, not being able to plan or be given a plan of what to do always exists. And so that's kind of being comfortable in the discomfort is something that I think for me is really, really hard because I'm such a planner and I'm such a director and I love having all the details organized and I love art directing, the scene and how it's going to go and how my days are going to go. And that's, I can never really do that. I have no idea what I'm walking into day to day or what's going to happen or who's going to need me or how I'm going to have to show up. So I think for me, like actually letting go has been something I continue to work on and think about and try to get better
Yeah. Oh, man.
at.
I again share the same sentiments. It's almost as like I don't know, the biggest thing that I've learned in the past even just a week or so has been about like worrying literally gets you nowhere, and sometimes it comes to a head and to a point where you're like, this is seriously not healthy, and you just have to like the only remedy for it is just to let it like just let go in
I
that
know it's
way.
so hard
It is like
because you want to worry and you love, what you're doing so much and you want to be able to, make a plan and things like that. I will say like the thing that when I'm in that worry mode, the thing that brings me the most comfort is to talk about like the worst case scenario. To know, to literally write it down or to talk about it, like what is the worst case scenario? And I think always like naming it, like putting it out there, like actually releasing it that these, five things might actually happen and they might be horrible, gives your kind of tricks your brain in a way to like being like, okay, well, like we could handle that. And okay, like if this happened, we could do that. Like no one's gonna die. No one's gonna, there's always, you're always gonna be like physically okay. But it's really tough.
Have you ever struggled or experienced the strive for perfection? And then how have, if you have, what are some ways that you've worked through that?
I don't think that I'm a perfectionist. I definitely hold myself to really, really high standards, but I feel like that creative brain, like I know when to let go. And I know when to walk away from a project, or I know when, like, we got to just release it. I'm not one of those people who hoards something and has to hold on to it for a really long time until it's perfect. So I think that's just kind of part of my DNA. I'm a bit more of a risk taker in that sense.
Gotcha. What would you say then now? Because how long have you guys been in the distribution model or figuring that out and building up now? The finding the screenings near you or hosting your own screening. Talk to us about this phase of the business and the film.
Yeah, so we publicly released the film in June, and we have been doing screening since then. So it hasn't even been a whole year, but it has been such a huge, we've had such, I feel like I've learned so much. I mean, I think we learn so many things every day as an entrepreneur. Like there's so many crazy things that happen that you can't expect, and you're just constantly growing, constantly figuring out, constantly problem solving. And distribution has been a real cycle. Like it's, we've kind of had to, again, like follow the audience, see how things go. We've had to reshift my idea of who I thought was going to be our audience in the beginning, was not our audience. We thought in the beginning, Fortune 500 companies will love this film. Like every women's network at a Fortune 500 company can host a screening. Like they were our target audience. And we started screening it with them, and they hated us.
What?
They were like, our millennial staff is going to leave us. Like, we can't show them this movie. You know, I cannot tell you the amazing companies I've spoken to who were terrified because their company cultures weren't strong enough, and because their women's, you know, maternity and paternity leave, you know, didn't happen and things like that. And they didn't want to actually have serious conversations about gender in the workplace, which is a huge compliment, right? You know, that we can have something that will really culturally shake those and rattle those cages, I think is actually a huge compliment, but we had to shift our model fast. So, okay, that's not working. Who do we go to now? And we really found that influencers and, you know, people who are embedded in their communities, who are sharing their networks, you know, coaches, people who are running networks of women's groups, those are really our hosts. And those are the people who get it and who love it and who see themselves in it and want to share it with their communities. And they want to mentor, you know, the up and comers in their spaces. So, you know, that took us a couple of months to figure out. So, and we've been doing it for less than a year. So, you know, we've definitely had to make big, big shifts constantly across, you know, all platforms, really.
Yeah, that just sparked another question for me. What's been the longest problem that you've worked on solving that you're like, okay, is this even a problem, or do I just need to like pack it up and just walk away from this piece?
I mean, I think company culture is something that I am really thoughtful about and that you can't like totally control. Like I noticing that I set the precedent for, you know, the energy in the space and for the types of projects we go after, I think has been not necessarily a problem, but something that has, you know, continued to shift and grow. And, you know, we've had a lot of internal changes in the last couple of months. Like I had a co-founder walk away for health reasons 2 months ago. So how do I motivate and excite the team when one of our founders literally walked away? You know, how do I keep people excited and motivated, you know, after we've been doing it for 3 years? So I think there's so many emotional changes. And I think those are the things you can't plan for. Those are the things you can't, you know, I can make a blueprint for how to launch a campaign or the designs we need or the copy we need, but I can't, you know, I don't know if Diana's going to be, you know, emotionally okay one day, or like if something happens with Kylie. Like our team is so small that we really have to be thoughtful. And I want to give a lot of attention to making sure that everyone emotionally is on a great level.
Mm-hmm. How do you map out your days?
Yeah,
like controlling the uncontrolled environment.
Yeah, so my team does a check-in every day at 10:30, Monday through Thursday, and it's a check-in to see how hosts are, to see how projects are going, and it's also an emotional check-in, like how's everyone's day going, like what's going on, where are we at energy-wise, and then I really try to block out huge chunks of my time to do certain things. Like I'm currently writing a written series for Feminist Wednesday about making a movie. So, you know, on Tuesdays, I have a big chunk of just writing. On Wednesdays is when I do all of our CFO work and I do our tax stuff and I go through finances and I set sales projections. So throughout my week, I have big chunks of non-negotiable time that like I have to do X, Y, or Z. Mm. And I find that when you come from a place of being, instead of being reactive, you're like actively working on the things that you need to work on. I find that that's a little bit helpful because there's so much that kind of can pop up. And, you know, we got a call yesterday, or I think it was Friday, and it was like, we needed to make a 21-page, you know, proposal for this thing and da-da-da-da, and, you know, for a big campaign. And so everything gets shifted, right? Mm-hmm. You know, all hands on deck for something like that. So you never really know. You can kind of set up your schedule as best as possible and then kind of just play it by ear.
What do you say... maybe not necessarily what, but like, how do you determine what you say yes to and what you give time to and what you don't give time to?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a great answer for that. I mean, I don't know. I think it kind of depends on where I'm at in the company and like what we're doing. Like right now we're promoting Your Moment of Ambition, which is our web series. We're thinking about launching digitally. So, you know, like the last 2 months, I haven't done any podcasts and I haven't done any press. I've been kind of in gr- grind mode for figuring out our launch and doing some internal stuff. And now I'm like kind of, okay, like it's getting warmer out. I'm ready to start talking again. I'm ready to start sharing, you know, what we're doing. And I've, I've booked a lot of meetings and I'm going to more things and stuff like that. So I think it's really cyclical almost of, you know, feeling out like what works and kind of what you're working on.
Mm-hmm. What, my Google Calendar just threw me for a loop there for a second when it popped up and I was like, I just had my questions there. Do you have any apps or anything that you like absolutely love that helps keep you sane, productive, at peace? Anything that you use on a daily basis that you find really helpful that you can share?
Oh, what a good question. I don't know if I have any great apps. I mean, my team uses Skype. We use Asana to stay organized. But I don't know. I'm a big podcast listener, so I love listening to a podcast in between meetings or on the train or something like that. I think that's probably like my go-to.
Mm-hmm. What's been like one or two of your favorite books that you've read?
I think Big Magic continues to be like one of my favorite resources. I'm writing a Gal's Guide to Making a Movie about like my creative process. And I think just kind of reading about Elizabeth Gilbert's creative process and hearing her conversations on Magic Lessons, which is a podcast she does about the book, I always find to be really fascinating. I feel like there's not a lot of resources for creative thinkers to kind of dive into and understand the process. So I think that's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I recently read like a Brooklyn rom-com that was like a really cute beach read called Ooh. The Brooklyn Mermaid. That's about a mom in Park Slope that was, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but a mermaid is involved. And that was like a really cute and fun read and kind of, I feel like we're so busy and I'm so immersed in what I'm doing that it's so fun to like just check out and read like a fantasy novel. That was kind of a fun break for a couple of weeks.
Totally. It's nice to like change up the brain and throw it off. It's rocker. If not, yeah. Same thing every day, right? Okay. So I have a few last rapid fire questions for you.
Sure.
If I gave you $100 today, how would you spend it?
Ooh. I would take my husband to dinner, probably.
Nice. Any specific choice of selection for food or place that's your favorite?
We love this ramen place on Flatbush called Chuko. It's like has the best ramen ever. So that'd probably be where we would go.
Nice. What is the next thing, if you could wave a magic wand, that you would outsource?
I have some editing and audio mixing work that I don't want to do. So that would be fun to have somebody handle that for me.
Mm-hmm. And the last question is, what is your final, like, I know Lewis Howes asked this question and I love it, so I'm taking it. But imagine you're driving past the billboard. Like, what's the one thing, if you could only tell people one thing on this podcast, what would it be? What would you leave them with?
I mean, something I've been thinking about a lot lately is like your tribe and your people and your support system. And I heard Shoshana from Girls talk on a panel and she said something that really resonated with me. And she was like, we don't have to do this alone. And I love the idea of that. I think, you know, being an entrepreneur is such a solo journey, you know, to be in this space, and you're often working alone and at home in the beginning, and it's so overwhelming. And I think as women, we're kind of conditioned to be more passive about asking for help. So I feel like I want people to know that if they're going through their journey or they're going through their path, like they have resources like this amazing podcast, like you don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be as lonely as it is right now.
Amen to that, girlfriend. Okay, where can people find you? And we'll be sure to include all this stuff in the show notes as well, you guys.
Yeah, dreamgirlfilm.com is all things Dream Girl. You can watch our trailer there. You can figure out if you want to bring a screening to your community. It's just $2.95 to host a public event, and we don't take any other fee besides that. It's a one-time fee. We've done 81 screenings in 81 different countries. So we've been so excited about sharing the film, and it'll come out, you know, this spring. So if you want to get on our newsletter and find out when it's coming out, the exact date, that would be really exciting. And I would love if people wanted to follow me on Instagram, just erin.bagwell. I just started a new Instagram account. I have like zero followers. It's very embarrassing. So if anyone wants to take pity and follow me on Instagram, I would really appreciate it.
I got you, girlfriend. Oh, this is awesome. Erin, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And I'm excited for us to maybe figure out ways how we can bring the screening to Chicago at some point. So
amazing. Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.